Science is an endlessly fascinating topic and one that we love to talk about here on this program. And we always learn a lot whenever Bassam Shakashiri stops by. He is a professor of chemistry at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, past president of the American Chemical Society. And Bassam, always great to have you with us. Welcome back.
Always happy to be here, Larry. I enjoy visiting with you and with the listening audience, and I can't tell you how often I run into people everywhere, on the street, at conferences, airports, away from Madison, in Madison, and they ask me about you, and they tell me how much they admire what you do for science. You have a whole slew of variety of guests at talk about and visit with you about many aspects of science. And as you say, Larry, science is a human endeavor.
Yeah.
And just today, you know, we're going to be celebrating the Science Festival. You know that,
big
right?
Big deal today. Oh, man. And this is going to be so much fun and a great opportunity to learn.
It is a great opportunity for kids of all ages, youngsters, adolescents, adults, parents, grandparents. The Wisconsin Science Festival is now in its fourth year here in Madison and across the state. Last year, there were nearly 18,000 people who participated in one or more of the activities.
Oh, that's great.
And it is held in Madison in a variety of locations. One of them is the Wisconsin Institutes for Discovery, and that is a very fine location that attracts not only teachers and researchers, but parents coming along with their kids, coming along with their friends. There are so many different attractive offerings this year. I can't even start to tell you where to go first. These activities, the Wisconsin Science Festival, celebrates creativity in science and in the arts. This is by design. The goal is to try to get people who are wanting to fulfill their human potential to be engaged in meaningful activities, hands-on activities, minds-on activities, to listen to outstanding speakers, to engage in conversations, to learn about the science of food, to learn about acoustics, about how we hear, what we hear, how do we enjoy what we hear, to be fully engaged in a very marvelous long weekend activities, as I say, not only in Madison at the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery, but in the greater Madison area and across the state. And that's why we want to invite your listeners to get to visit the WisconsinScienceFest.org website, because all the details are there. WisconsinScienceFest.org.
And actually, I have a link on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So if people want to go there, they can just click, or if you're already there, just look around, you'll find that link and click on it there. I mean, we're even discussing supper clubs at this event this year.
Supper clubs, the science of wine.
Yes.
How we enjoy food, taste, the aspects of taste, how the brain figures out the signals that it receives from the senses to give us the joy that we have, and how we deal with anxiety, how we deal with fear. It's just a fabulous exposure to science as a human endeavor.
And a lot of it, and just as as an aside, a lot of it is directed right at youngsters. There's so many activities, hands-on things for youngsters to do. I really... I'll be there with my daughter Emily this weekend. We're going to have a lot of fun. I know she's looking forward to it, and I hope we get lots of children there.
Children of all ages.
That's right.
The goal is, and I hope that this year we attract even more people than have been attracted in recent years. As I said, last year's total attendance was about 18,000. And Larry, I am giving a special presentation.
You are.
A science extravaganza on Saturday morning at 10 a.m. in the chemistry building. It's free. You don't need a ticket. You can just walk around. For the vast majority of the events, you don't need a ticket.
Yeah.
So Saturday morning in the
chemistry. At what time?
At 10 a.m. In the chemistry building. And I'll tell you, I have a very special friend who is making a presentation right after me. His name is Theodore Gray. And Theodore Gray has just published a fabulous book, gorgeous color, about molecules. That's the name of the book.
Ah.
This is a sequel to what he published about 4 years ago, a book called Elements. In fact, he has an app that is highly popular that shows the various properties of the chemical elements. Now he's moved into molecules. So he will be giving a 50-minute presentation right after me Saturday morning.
Lots going on there. But Sam Shakashiri, our guest today, we're kicking off talking about the Wisconsin Science Festival, but also there's lots more we can talk about with him about science. And certainly, are you a science fan? Where'd you learn your love of science from? Did you pursue maybe science as a hobby or a profession? What inspired you? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show.
I really like your question, Larry, because I want to tell you how I got into science.
Yes.
When I was a youngster growing up in my native Lebanon, my mother knitted a sweater for me. It was a yellow sweater. And I wanted to know what yellow is. So I asked her questions. I said, what is the sweater made of? She said, it's made of wool. I said, well, the wool comes from sheep, and they're not yellow. She said, well, then something else is done to the wool. And that was the initial start of my, as I recall it, of my being inquisitive and asking questions. And later on, I started making observations and asking the same kinds of questions I get now. Why do the leaves change color in the fall? Larry, why do the leaves change color in the fall? why is it that when the wind blows on a body of water, we see what we call white caps? And is the color of those white caps related to the color of the stuff that floats up in the, that floats in the sky? How does the microwave oven work?
Yeah.
Oh, we are all full of questions. All questions. And what is really critical is for siblings and for parents and for grandparents and guardians is to nurture the curiosity. Nurture it by engaging in conversations, even though you don't know the answer to the specific question that's being asked. It's important to keep the conversation going. And, and you know, sometimes we say, well, go look it up on the internet. Well, that's okay, but it's not really okay. What is important is to be engaged in a human discourse. Yeah. And how do we formulate the question? Why are we curious about this? You know, when I asked the question about the leaves, you know, I wasn't interested in the names of the sugars that change color, that change their activity and reactivity as the temperature changes, as the humidity changes, as the amount of sunlight changes. Am I giving you the answers now, Larry? It's very important to be engaging and to take the joy of fielding questions and share it, not only with your own kids, not only at home, not only in school, but with everyone in society.
You know, and I just want to bring up one other thing. You mentioned science and the arts, and I know many scientists who are also very big in the arts and will credit a lot of their own work to their interest and their love of I know some musicians who are really scientists and work in the lab but love to play the violin or the piano and so forth.
Creativity, Larry, is a topic that we're learning more about now and how what it means and so on. But you're right. There are highly creative people in science, highly creative people in the arts, in the humanities. And now C.P. Snow wrote a book a long time ago, and he said there are two cultures, the culture of science and the culture of the humanities. And I am one who aligns myself with those who say, truly, there is one culture. science is a human endeavor. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And the way we do science is different than the way we do scholarly work in the humanities. No question about it. But there are common dimensions.
Yes.
There are common intersections. And frankly, Larry, as you well know, that is one of the many important programs that we at the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy promote.
Yeah.
To explore the intersecting commonalities between science, the arts, and the humanities based and on creativity and wanting to learn more of about that, too.
Bassam Shakashiri, our guest, as we talk with him about the Wisconsin Science Festival, the world of science. I want to get into the Nobel Prizes for science as well. You can join in with your own questions or comments. Are you have a science question? Are you a science fan? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And let's turn to Jim in Montello, who has a question. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry, and good morning, Professor Shakashiri. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question that's bugged me for quite a while. I've puzzled over it till my puzzler is sore. The silk mantles on lanterns, what's happening at the surface of the silk mantle that produces that combustion that gives us the very bright light, whether you use propane or kerosene or naphtha, white gas, mineral spirits? Is there something catalytic going on? And does it have anything to do with the protein that's in the silk that the mantle's made out of? Or is that protein gone by the time the mantle becomes ash and is used?
Hmm. Flames are fascinating, aren't they, Jim?
They're wonderful.
We watch the flames in the fireplace. We watch the flame of a candle. We watch the flame of a kerosene lamp, as you said. And that visual sensory input that our brain receives is the subject of tremendous and deep studies. So there are two aspects to what I want to share with you, Jim, and others, as they relate to your question. The chemistry and physics of what happens in the combustion process, and also, so that's what happens in front of the eye. But now, from the neurosciences, we're learning more about what happens behind the eye.
Yeah.
And that's really fascinating to me. And that's part of the research and development that I and my group are engaged in right now. So flames have been studied. I can give you one reference after another about the composition of the flames, how much oxygen is required to give you a bright flame. You notice in the combustion reaction of a candle, the lower part of the flame is blue. That's because there's more richness of oxygen coming from the cold air that's near the bottom. Hot gases rise, and so when the combustion process takes place, then the candle continues to glow until you run out of fuel, or you blow it out, or you run out of, or you have no more oxygen. As I said, I don't even know where to start in answering question about what's going there. Let me say that flames are fascinating because of their colors, because of the temperatures that they have in different regions. And I want to tell you something really neat that has been discovered not too long ago in flames. Buckyballs.
Oh.
Buckyballs are in the soot of flames. Buckyballs are carbon, 60 carbon atoms bonded together. Sometimes there's 70 of them and so on. And our ancestors, you know, 10,000 years ago, even before, observed flames and enjoyed the heat and enjoyed cooking and so on. But they never knew what we as a human species discovered in the 1980s. The 1985 Nobel Prize in Chemistry, you said you want to talk about Nobel Prizes. The Nobel Prize in Chemistry was awarded for the discovery of buckyballs, and buckyballs are present in the soot of flames. So, Jim, I've given you more than you asked for about this. I'm going to find the direct references that relate to the brightness, because that's what you asked about.
Yeah.
And I'm going to post them on my website. You know, Larry, we post the summary of the conversation you and I have, and we add references.
Yes.
And Jim, you'll find it there. It should be out. It should be posted by next Monday at the latest.
Yeah, and that's it's always wonderful to go back to your page, and it's the page is scifun.org, so scifun.org is the page to go to. We have a link on my Facebook page as well. And when Bassam promises, he delivers.
And we have a link on our webpage to your webpage, too.
Back and forth we go. Thanks a lot, Jim, for calling. Appreciate your call. Bassam Shakashiri, professor of chemistry at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, our guest today. Give us a call with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show for that. I'm Larry Mueller. Carl Christensen, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hope you'll stay tuned at 11:45. We're going to get some great travel advice from Rick Sini of FairCompare.com, right now visiting with our good friend Bassam Shakashiri about the wonders of science. Again, join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Certainly love to hear from you. And Bassam, as long as we were talking about Nobel prizes and prizes being announced and so forth, what does it really mean to someone in the sciences to win that a Nobel Prize?
It's said to be the greatest recognition that one can get for their scientific accomplishments. And so every October, the Nobel Foundation and the Swedish Academies announce the recipients of the Nobel Prizes. They're a little over $1 million each. They are the result of what Alfred Nobel, who invented dynamite, said in his will should be done to promote discovery in areas such as chemistry, physics, and there are prizes in those two areas.
Yep.
There's also one in medicine and physiology. There's also one in literature. And there is one in peace. Actually, the Norwegian Academy is the one that makes the decisions about the peace prizes.
Yeah.
About 2 decades or so ago, a Nobel Prize in the economic sciences was added. So it's interesting to see how people begin to speculate who's going to win the prize. The prize is given to no more than 3 people, so it can be shared. And it is shared for significant accomplishments that have been made by an individual or a group of individuals that truly advance our understanding of the various areas that I have mentioned. And, Larry, I have to tell you, I know many Nobel Prize winners. They're fine people. They're very technically expert in what they do. I also know many other people who are deserving of the Nobel Prize. So it has become a symbol of the greatest recognition in science. There are other prizes, I must say, that have been established since then. Fred Kavli, a Norwegian immigrant to the United States, he established a prize called the Kavli Prize, and it is also for $1 million. It's awarded by the Norwegian academies, and Fred Kavli died about a year ago, but the recognition there is for three areas: in the neurosciences, in nanosciences, and in astroscience.
Yeah.
So from the tiny, minute, all the way to the to the universe. I had the privilege of being a guest at the Kavli Foundation ceremonies last month in Oslo. It was a fabulous display of virtuosity in scientific accomplishment. So I mentioned that as another example. The Nobel Prizes will be awarded in December, on the 10th of December, and they will be given to the recipients that were announced last year. The chemistry recipients are outstanding. I know two of them personally. The physics recipients are Japanese, and the physics prize has been given to the development of the blue LED, the light-emitting diode. And this has consequences. It has ramifications that can help us in the long run use less energy to light for lighting purposes. You know, we use now tungsten filaments, and they emit light, but they also give off a lot of heat, and they're not as efficient. So the LEDs have a promise in helping us reduce our energy consumption, especially at the tail end of the electric grid where the power comes to us. What we really have to be concerned about is how much energy is lost in the transmission from where the power was generated until it gets to us. And that's about 90% of it, actually.
Connie in Portage has a question for you, Bassam. So let's go to Connie. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning to both of you.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I have a question. I can't sleep when the moon is full. And I wondered if it's true that the tides have something to do with that and that our bodies are 90% water. And I wondered what Professor Shakashure thought.
I'll give you a response that one kid gave me when I asked her a question after she and I discussed not this topic but another topic. She said, "I have no idea." No, I'm joking. Why does the Earth rotate? I don't think the body in the water, the water in my body or in your body has anything to do with it. As far as I know, maybe some neuroscientist is doing some research on that and will tell us differently.
It does seem as though, for example, robberies and there's more mayhem going on when there's a full moon for some reason, and we don't know why.
Well, light is people who study sleep tell us very clearly that we should all get enough sleep, and the question is how much is enough, and they say, you know, anywhere from 7 to 9 hours. So sleep deprivation is a cause. The direct cause that has been documented for not only accidents that happen in the morning, but also for other crimes, for crimes, not other for crimes and so on. Lighting is a very important factor that affects our sleep cycle, and so I will tell you, you know, I'm a night person, although I enjoy getting up in the morning and seeing the beautiful sunrise, especially when I see it over Lake Mendota. I live on Lake Mendota. I don't know, Connie, am I answering your question?
Well, I just wondered if it had anything to do with, like, the moon pulls the tides up, and since it pulls on the tides, maybe it pulled on my brain.
Well,
I'm going to ask that question verbatim to one of my friends in the neurosciences. I don't think they know the answer either, but maybe it's something to think about.
And if you find something out, I'm sure it'll go up on your page, scifund.org.
And if anyone in the audience knows something about it, call in, please.
Let's do it. Thanks, Connie.
Thanks.
Appreciate the call. Ron in Wallace, Michigan is up next. Ron, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
My question is, why does the Earth rotate from west to east? The sun rises in the east and sets in the west, and the axis of the Earth is tilted on a 23 and a half degrees. Why is that?
Oh, man.
That's a Jim Lattis question, right?
Yeah, huh? I was going to say.
So we know that the Earth rotates and it's tilted. That's why we have... That's the explanation for the four seasons that we have. That's a very, very good observation. What's the origin of that? It probably has to do with how a very, very long time ago, the formation of the planet you know, what would happen... What would happen if the Earth were not tilted at that angle, for example?
I don't want to find out. I'd rather have it just the way it is.
You like it the way it is, right?
I like it the way it is. Well, I really don't want to change it.
Well, I don't want to change it either, but I'm just curious about how things might be different if that didn't happen. So why does it... What's the direction of the rotation? I would say that it's the when it was formed, it was spinning in that direction, and that's what it is, Ron.
I have a Facebook. Here's another one. Boy, I'm telling you, you're getting some tough ones today. Here's one from Tim, who is a mason by trade, and he says even after working with cement for years, at times the stuff seems magical to me. Can you explain the chemistry of cement? You know, and when you
How much time do we have?
And when you mix, you know, you throw water in there and...
All kinds of calcium compounds, silicates, some carbonates. Chemistry of cement is very complicated, but it is interesting to watch how the cement dries. It's interesting that the cement absorbs carbon dioxide also. You know, I'll put a direct reference on the web to that.
It was interesting that the College of Engineering had one of the early cement guys, developers, actually they preserved a lot of cement from the earliest years that they had available of cement. And every 10 years, I think, they would come back and break a chunk of it. And they've been doing it for 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, like that. And, you know, they've kept that pieces.
Is it settling differently?
They're looking at what happens to it over all these years.
Yeah.
And then they're breaking it up. Yeah. So it's pretty cool stuff. So I know there are some people in engineering with a little background on that, too. Tom in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Larry. I just wanted to comment on the question the fellow just had. I don't know what the origin of our direction of rotation is, but I do know, at least insofar as things I've read, that the reason that our Earth is tilted on its axis is the result of a collision with a large celestial body of some type, and that, furthermore, it may have been the same event that was responsible for the creation of our moon. Now, if somebody knows more than me, hopefully they'll get on and point out the error of my ways. But I'm pretty sure that's how we got tilted on our axis is due to collision with a large comet or asteroid or something.
Thank you, Tom.
Oh, sure.
Appreciate it. I would not have wanted to been around when that happened either. That would give you a little start. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Well, let's talk a little bit more about. Before I forget it, I was going to ask you some more about the Nobel Prize awards. But it's hard to believe we're talking about this today. But tickets are already available for your chemistry. Christmas chemistry show, and I don't want to forget about mentioning that, which is the 45th edition coming up this year, 45 years, and it's also celebrating a birthday.
45 years we've been doing Once Upon a Christmas Cheery in the Lab of Shaka Sheary. This is my 45th year as a faculty member at the University of Wisconsin. I will tell you, Larry, what I have said many times before. My proudest professional achievement is being a tenured faculty member at University of Wisconsin-Madison. And so We're marking the 45th anniversary of the Christmas show this year by holding it at the newly remodeled Union Theater.
Oh, wonderful.
And we're doing only one show. We usually do four.
Right.
We usually do them in the chemistry building, but this year we're doing it in a very large venue.
Yeah, that's a big venue.
It seats almost 1,100 people.
Yeah.
So we're expecting 1,000 people plus on the afternoon of Sunday, November 30th. It is the Sunday immediately after Thanksgiving. We're going to have our usual special guests, Bucky Badger and Santa Claus. But this year, to mark this very special anniversary of this free and open to the public presentation, we have the University of Wisconsin Marching Band with Mike LeCrone.
Oh.
We have the Madison Youth Choir. We have a couple of other surprises. I want to keep them for the people who come in person. Wisconsin Public Television will be videotaping the program and will telecast it later on. Air times have not been announced yet, but it'll be sometime in December. We're doing this at the Union Theater, but you can get tickets, free tickets, by going to the website scifund.org, scifun.org, and you can see the announcement right there. Tickets are free. They're moving fast, Larry.
I would bet.
Yeah, and I would invite everyone in the listening audience to consider coming to see this very special anniversary show with the guests that I mentioned, a few others that are really, really cool guests, and the audience will like them. So you can get your free ticket by going to scifund.org. Fill out the form. It's right there on the web. You click download it, print it, and mail it in, and we'll send you the tickets almost immediately. We're very excited about doing this, Larry. This is my gift to the community. Every year we've been doing this for 45 years now, coming up number 45. It is a very special interaction between me and a group of talented, creative artists, scientists. I won't say anymore. It's going to be a lot of fun, and so everyone in the audience is invited to come to it.
And again, it's free, but you need a ticket because these things, BASAM shows sell out. So, I mean, quote, sell out. I mean, you wouldn't want to come and then not be able to get in because it was already full. And, you know, there are you can only put so many people in a room. I guess that's all I can say about that.
That's the reason we issue the tickets. They're free tickets. Available to anyone who would like to come with friends, come with family, come. We've had people come from Chicago, from northern Minnesota, from Iowa, from all over the place. They came from downstate Illinois to attend. It's a special set of celebrations. It's fun, Larry. It's really a joyful,
it is a lot of fun.
It's a joyful experience for me and for my colleagues who share in wanting to make the presentation. But you know what makes a great show, Larry? A great audience. And that's what
we want
to have a great audience.
Well, we have a great audience right here listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm always so appreciative of the people who call, the people who listen, the people who call in the show, and always a pleasure to have you with us, BASAM, too. And just again, I want to, in the last couple of minutes here, I just want to go back to the Wisconsin Science Festival. It kicks off today in Madison. A lot going on in Madison, but across the state as well.
It's underway already, right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, as soon as I leave the studio, guess where I'm going?
The Wisconsin Institute for Discovery.
That's where a good chunk of the activities is taking place. And there are artists, there are dancers, there are musicians, there are scientists, there are exploration stations. This goes on today, tonight, tomorrow night, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah.
And at various locations in addition to the town center at the Wisconsin Institutes for Discovery. And all of these are listed in detail on the website wisconsinsciencefest.org, wisconsinsciencefest.org, for the locations in the Milwaukee area, in Appleton, in northern Wisconsin, as well as what's going on in Madison. It's a grand set of activities. And Larry, if you sense my enthusiasm for this, there's a deep reason for it. And I want to share it with you and with the audience.
Yeah.
In 2009, I wrote an article in the magazine of the Wisconsin Academy, and I suggested that we should have something called the Wisconsin Science Festival. And it took 2 years. We held the first one in 2011. This is now the fourth year.
Yeah.
It's going to be the biggest and the best, and we do want people to come to nurture their curiosity, to come and enjoy the hands-on activities, to come and ask questions, to come and visit with each other, to come and listen to speakers who are outstanding, to watch creative artists put themselves on display as they share the creativity that they have. So it's a wonderful activity, and I hope to see many people today, tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday. And if you are in the audience today and you happen to come to any activity and you see me, would you please come up to me and say, "Bassam, I heard you talk about the Science Festival. I'd like to.
That'd be wonderful.
I really would like that."
Bassam, thank you so much. Bassam Shakashiri, professor of chemistry at the UW-Madison and past president of the American Chemical Society. It's the largest professional society in the world, as a matter of fact. And
it is. Over 161,000 people.
Yeah, wonderful.
With about 25,000 of them overseas, but it's a wonderful organization. I've had the privilege and great honor to serve as president, and I'm very pleased that some of the initiatives we started, including climate science concerns, quality of water, education at all levels, are still underway.
Wow. He'll be back, and we will talk with him again. There are always so many fascinating aspects of the world of science, and Bassam does a great job of communicating his enthusiasm for it. Coming up next, Rick Seney of FairCompare.com is going to share his enthusiasm for air travel that avoids a lot of the pitfalls out there and doesn't cost more than it needs to. So I hope you'll stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.